requirements would also decrease. But the individual units would never become as small as a nerve cell, a neuron. You could pack a billion nerve cells into 1 cubic inch. No human miniaturization method would ever achieve that economy of space, nor would any human method ever produce a unit that operated on so little power as a nerve cell. Therefore, make your computers from living nerve cells. It was already possible to grow isolated nerve cells in tissue culture. It was possible to alter them artificially in different ways. In the future, it would be possible to grow them to specification, to make them link up. Once you could do that, you could make a computer that was, say, 6 cubic feet in volume, but contained thousands of billions of nerve cells. Its energy requirements would not be excessive. Its heat production and waste products would be manageable. Yet it would be the most intelligent entity on the planet, by far. Form Q. Preliminary work was already being done in a number of laboratories and government research units around the country. Advances were being made. But for McPherson, the most exciting prospect was not a super-intelligent organic computer. That was just a side product. What was really interesting was the idea of an organic prosthesis for the human brain. Because once you developed an organic computer, a computer composed of living cells and deriving energy from oxygenated, nutrified blood, then you could transplant it into a human being, and you would have a man with 2 brains. What would that be like? McPherson could hardly imagine it. There were endless problems, of course. Problems of interconnection, problems of location, speculative problems about the competition between the old brain and the new transplant. But there was plenty of time to solve that before 1986. After all, in 1950, most people still laughed at the idea of going to the moon. Form Q. It was only a vision now, but with funding, it would happen, and he had been convinced that it would happen, until Benson left the hospital. That changed everything. Ellis stuck his head in the office door. "Anybody want coffee?" "Yes," McPherson said. He looked over at Morris. "No," Morris said. He got up out of his chair. "I think I'll replay some of Benson's interview tapes."
"Good idea,"
McPherson said, though he did not really think so. He realized that Morris had to keep busy, had to do something, anything, just to remain active. Morris left, Ellis left, and McPherson was alone with his multicolored charts and his thoughts. Chapter 11. It was noon when Ross finished with Anders, and she was tired. The scotch had calmed her, but it had intensified her fatigue. Toward the end, she had found herself stumbling over words, losing track of her thoughts, making statements and then amending them, because they were not exactly what she had intended to say. She had never felt so tired, so drugged with fatigue in her life. Anders, on the other hand, was maddeningly alert. He said, "Where do you suppose